From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Pete Holmes is Seattle's city attorney. That means his clients include the mayor, though the mayor doesn't always think so, the city council, the police, and the public, if you live in Seattle. Before getting elected, Pete Holmes was a private attorney in Seattle for almost 25 years, also an original member of the Seattle Police Department's Office of Professional Accountability Review Board. Pete Holmes served as chairman of that board between 2003 and 2008. Pete Holmes, thank you so much for stopping by today.
My pleasure, Ross. Thanks.
These marathon bombings in Boston have put everyone on edge. I understand there was a bomb scare in downtown Seattle. It turned out to be a hairdryer, so it was not a big issue. I wonder whether at City Hall there have been any discussions about security.
There have. It's in some sense one of these things where we're in a fishbowl, and there has been some concern about how we might up our security, but it's complicated by the fact that we're also in an open carry state, and so there's a limited amount of things that we can do under state law locally. It's not treated the same way under state law as schools and courthouses, for instance.
We hear that the marathon scheduled in Seattle will continue to take place. Is there any thought yet about the marathon races, about CFAIR and other events that are described as soft targets of terrorism where people could be particularly vulnerable?
Well, you know, the Boston bombings, of course, have renewed interest in it, and that's just been since yesterday. But my office does work closely with the emergency center, the EOC downtown, and we're plugged in closely with that. And so this has been an ongoing discussion, whether it was with the Occupy movement or with May Day of last year. And of course, we're already meeting to talk about how to anticipate and respond to potential public disturbances and dangers in these events coming up.
Pete Holmes is with the Seattle City Attorney. You recently traveled to Copenhagen, and they invited you there to talk about the issue of marijuana legalization. What are they considering, and why do they want to talk to you?
It's amazing to have this reality check from time to time, Ross. The sea change, if you will, that Washington voters and Colorado voters achieved back in November has had ramifications across the globe. On March 12, I'd left Judge Robart's courtroom where he had just approved the monitor's plan for the Seattle Police Department, went straight to SeaTac and flew into Copenhagen. And one of the things that was that greeted me was a newspaper article that said that the Lord Mayor of Copenhagen was going to ask me if Denmark could import from Washington State to supply their marijuana needs. And of course, I had to break the news to him gently that keeping our borders tight is one of the goals of 502.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're a few steps down the road in terms of what you were able to tell them.
That's right. But, you know, the fact that at the Copenhagen City Hall, the largest conference room was just packed with people from all over Europe shows how much interest there is. The change in government policy, not just with regard to marijuana, but with the way we use our law enforcement resources and our, whether or not you treat something as a public safety issue or a public health issue rather than criminalizing it, it's been something that we have broken through, if you will, and gotten people to start debating this openly. And it's an exciting time.
Well, for quite a while, by vote of the people, marijuana enforcement has been the lowest priority of police. But it's still against the law to sell marijuana. Are you prosecuting anyone in Seattle for doing that?
Well, first, the sale of marijuana is a felony that would not be prosecuted by my office, but by county prosecutors. And you're probably aware that the federal government just recently sentenced some sellers that were operating well outside the boundaries of medical marijuana law for precisely that, for distributing marijuana. We have toward the end of this year to get a legal supply system up and up and running. The Liquor Control Board is doing an amazing job for it. And I think until then, most law enforcement agencies and prosecutors are sort of stepping back from it to allow that process to unfold and are being mindful of particular issues like, proximity to schools, large quantities and the like.
Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes is with me. Of course, hanging over this whole process of going through the regulation for marijuana to be legal in our state is the Department of Justice, and it's still, of course, against federal law, as you mentioned. Do you have any insight at all into what Eric Holder or the Obama White House may or may not do when it comes to these laws in Washington and Colorado that clearly contravene federal law?
I really don't, other than to extrapolate from the fact that despite invitations from former DEA heads, the administration has not weighed in and said you cannot move forward. There have only been, I think, really high-level and very thoughtful discussions where the emphasis seems to be finding where federal law and I-502 complement each other rather than conflict with each other. Because 502 is about taking this lucrative market away from criminal enterprises and controlling it and making sure that youth access is curtailed and that we don't have driving while impaired.
So I'm going by a storefront today, Pete, and I see a big banner up. It says Marijuana Cafe opening 420, which is a significant day for people who smoke marijuana. Are you hearing any reports of places of marijuana cafes opening up? Are you doing anything about it?
I've certainly heard the reports of facilities in Tacoma. There have been some local entrepreneurs that have pitched some ideas like this. And I try to point out to them, first of all, again, that whatever someone at the city level could tell you does not control what the federal government will do. So if you want to open a cafe and you want to take that risk, that entrepreneurial risk, then that's something that the DEA may want to talk with you about or the U.S. attorney.
But it's not a risk in term, as far as from your office?
Well, again, my office would not be prosecuting the distribution side of marijuana, and possession up to an ounce is legal for adults 21 and over. So what remains illegal under 502 is open display. And of course, our no smoking rules apply to marijuana just as they do to tobacco. So those are all within our wheel well. And I have stated publicly that if the Seattle Police Department tickets for open use and consumption on the streets, I will enforce those. I will certainly stand by those.
The Seattle Times editorialized recently that the regulated, taxed legal marijuana system we're in the process of creating cannot coexist with an unregulated, untaxed medical marijuana system that we currently have. What do you think?
That may be overstating it a bit. I do think that we need to focus in on the control aspect of 502. And I hope that as a practical matter, 502's system of state-sanctioned growers, producers, and retailers will be able to supply all the medical marijuana needs that we have. And in fact, they would be providing a product that we can be sure of purity and potency and all the things that that are lacking now in the current medical marijuana system.
Pete Holmes is my guest, the Seattle City Attorney. Earlier this month, you charged a Seattle police officer, Chris Hairston, with a misdemeanor for assaulting a handcuffed man. You've declined to charge another Seattle police officer, Clayton Powell, in a separate incident last August when a young man during a street disturbance in South Seattle and later on in a holding cell. Maybe you could explain your thinking on why you charge in one case and not the other. What's going on here?
You bet. In the case of the decline charges, we did reach outside the city and engage an expert, an L.A. Former officer, former lieutenant, excuse me, and a lawyer who has quite a background in police accountability. We asked him to take a look at the evidence that had been presented to us. All of these cases, Ross, are referred to my office from SPD. I don't go looking for them. And we wanted to make sure how viable these charges are. We think we owe it to police officers that they should we should give that every consideration before we file charges, take that effort. And in this particular case, the expert said that while the conduct was troubling, it was unlikely that a jury would convict. And I felt that it was important that I not waste city resources on a trial that even my own expert says is not likely to result in a conviction.
That investigator also urged that police evaluate Powell's conduct to decide if he's fit to continue to serve as an officer. This is the police department. Have they done that, though? Do you know?
Well, to the extent that there are concerns today, he has been with the department a long time. I think that SPD, as part of its reform effort, and perhaps in this particular instance, is well served by going back and looking at were there other missed opportunities with this officer to develop his career more appropriately, to use discipline where necessary. That's not my job. It's certainly, it falls squarely in the SPD to look at their discipline system.
You defend Seattle Police Department sometimes in cases of excessive force. Is that right?
That's correct.
You're their attorney. And it's also the case that, as you alluded to, the Department of Justice found that Seattle Police unconstitutionally used excessive force. And now the city is under a court order to implement reforms that are taking place going forward. What is your role now?
Well, I am the city's legal representative in court. When you look at the caption, it's one that's kind of sobering. It's United States of America versus the City of Seattle. And as you pointed out, we are under the jurisdiction of a federal district judge, Judge Robart, and there is now an appointed monitor who answers only to the judge, Merrick Bob. And whenever we have to go to the court, whenever we have to respond on behalf of the city, it comes through my office on over my letterhead or over my pleading paper. And so I continue to make certain that the city is well represented, that we are carrying out the goals and objectives of the consent decree, and that I'm hearing from all parts of the city that have relevant input, the city council, for instance, which has to appropriate funds, and certainly the chief and the command staff at SPD to make sure that we're implementing, that we're achieving the objectives, and that we're doing so in a cost-efficient manner.
And do you think that we are? I mean, you've had lengthy experience working with the Seattle Police Department, not only in your current role, but in your previous role chairing the Office of Professional Accountability Review Board. Do you think that the DOJ ruling was an accurate ruling? And do you think that the steps that have been taken and agreed to by the city are doing what need to be done?
We are past debating the ruling by DOJ. Those are findings by a department of the United States government, and it is not an adjudication by a court. That said, we took it all very seriously, and we entered into a reform plan that was acceptable to both DOJ and SPD. And my job now is to make sure that we're compliant, to make sure that we're responding appropriately. I think that, it's important to understand that when you look at the example set by other cities that have come under a federal consent decree, Seattle is really no different in the way that we have responded. Where I think we're fortunate, Ross, is that we have a very hands-on judge who is very informed and interested in this case. We have the best monitor we could possibly have. And I believe that despite hiccups along the way, the stages of grieving, if you will, I think is what Interim Chief Pugel pointed out the other day, and I fully agree with him. Seattle's no different. We're no worse. We're no better than some of these other departments that have had to get used to the idea that they need to reform.
As you alluded to, we have an acting police chief now. John Diaz stepped down. We've got one city council member, mayoral candidate, and former chair of the Public Safety Committee, Tim Burgess, telling us last week, you need to wait until this mayoral election is over. You need to do a national search on this. You've got the current head of the Public Safety Committee, Bruce Harrell, also a mayoral candidate, saying, no, we need to hire the new chief as soon as possible, and we should look within the department. Two very different views on how to proceed. What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think that the mayoral campaign will appropriately focus front and center on the next chief. Every candidate should be answering questions about who they believe should be the kind of chief to lead the department forward in reform. They need to respect the process. But we, the voters, need to hear from every one of these candidates, how do you believe the chief should function? Should it come from inside the department, or should we look?
Well, what do you think? What do you think? Should it come from inside the department or not? These two mayoral candidates have definite views on it. What do you think?
You know, I am conflicted. It really does, in my mind, come down to who are the final candidates. There certainly are some stars within the department that really have embraced reform, who have the knowledge and experience to carry it forward.
Say some have, I assume that means some have not.
That's correct, sure. Mm-hmm. And as I said, that's no different than any other department. You have resistance, you have denial, you have people who are ready to go. Let's be the best. So, it really does come down to how much interest there is within the department and outside, because it'll come down at the end who is the best match for Seattle.
And when you say it should be part of the mayoral debate, and already is that to say that you think it would not be good to rush this to make a selection before the election in November?
Well, when you consider the fact that the mayor is the one who will make that choice, I think that we all need to hear a couple of things. Number one, that the mayoral candidate recognizes first that the choice of the chief of the police department is the number one defining issue that any mayor faces. Public safety is job one. It's the largest and most expensive of the general fund departments, and it's where the rubber meets the road, if you will. The people that we grant a gun and a badge to protect us and to police us. So it's got to be job one. It's got to be one that's taken up seriously, and that all of these mayoral candidates take the time to educate themselves and state very clearly what they're going to look for in a chief.
Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes, it's no secret that you've had your run-ins with Mike McGinn over the Department of Justice report, over the implementation of this. What's the state of your working relationship now?
I continue to bring my best game every day to this job. I represent the city of Seattle. I have always sought to be collaborative and inclusive in decisions that affect the city as a whole.
And do you feel those fine ideals are being reciprocated by the mayor in your relationship with him?
We have had disagreements concerning the scope of my authority, and I think he has a much narrowly circumscribed view of that, and I respect the difference of opinion, but I will certainly carry out all the duties that the voters have entrusted to me. And ironically, it has not been to say I'm the decider, if I can hearken back to George W. Bush. Rather, it's the fact that I have said we need to have buy-in across the city. It takes a village to have a good, healthy police department, and that means your city council's on board, as well as your command staff, as well as your mayor's office, as well as your city attorney's office.
And your term is up this fall also, is that
That's
right?
That's correct. I am running for re-election.
Okay. And, well, it might be a little early to ask you, but are you going to be endorsing a mayoral candidate either before the primary or after the primary?
Probably not before the primary. It's important to remember, just as you asked, you know, I serve the city, and it's important that I have a good working relationship to the best of my ability with whoever the voters choose to be our mayor. There are two city council members, as you've pointed out, that I have excellent working relationship with both of them, and they all understand that I'm not going to weigh in at this point in time, certainly, and pick a candidate. I think it's best that I try to stay out.
You said at this time, and you said before the primary. Is that to say that after the primary you may weigh in?
I'll certainly revisit it then.
And do you have any opposition? There are obviously people who would like to not have you in your role. Do you have any opposition right now for your reelection bid?
I do not. No formally announced candidate. May 17 is the filing deadline, so there's still time. And there are lawyers out there who probably wouldn't mind having my job. But I think I've done a really good job. I love the job, and I'm anxious to carry out another 4 years at it.
Pete Holmes, Seattle City Attorney, thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
This is KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.